Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Welcome to ModPath Chat, the official podcast of Modern Pathology, featuring interviews with authors and experts on the latest science, technology, and developments in the field of pathology. Your host, Dr. George Netto, is the editor-in-chief of Modern Pathology and the chair of pathology at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. Here's Dr. Netto.
Welcome to today's ModPath Chat. I'm pleased to have with us a most promising young pathologist, physician, scientist, Dr. Daniela Hirsch from Heidelberg, Germany. Dr. Hirsch is finishing her sixth year of training. They train for 6 years in Germany at the Institute of Pathology at the University of Heidelberg. Her scientific interest is in the molecular underpinning of intestinal cancer. This goes back to her doctoral thesis at the University of Regensburg, and also subsequently where she came across the Atlantic and spent some time, a couple of years of a postdoc at the NCI working on the same topic. Her work has already earned her prestigious awards, including the Rudolf Virchow Award of German Society of Pathology. I hope I pronounced it correctly. Dr. Hirsch is here today to discuss her ModPath publication on the molecular characteristic of ulcerative colitis-associated colorectal cancer. Very important topic. So thank you, Daniela, for accepting my invitation.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Netto, for this very kind introduction and having me. It's a great pleasure and honor to be here with you and discuss our recent study.
You should be proud. It's a great study, and I'm really impressed of what you've accomplished already, and hopefully you'll do even more as a faculty. So it is intentional that we have on this chat young investigators and trainees to cover the whole spectrum of our stars. So let's get to the paper, and as usual, let's start with the rationale. Why did you do the study?
Well, the study was actually prompted by a previous study that we did in Crohn's colitis patients, where we characterized the dynamics of the genome alterations that underpin the colorectal cancer development in those patients. And there we found that they have distinct genomic signatures that are distinct from the ones in sporadic colorectal cancer. And we also saw that the tumor development starts at the genomic level before we see any morphologic changes. And we wanted to follow up on that and see whether that's the same or similar patterns in ulcerative colitis. And so we began to collect samples for that project.
So we'll get to the design. That's good enough reason. So you move from Crohn to a cousin lesion to UC. Now, how did you design study? How many patients and what kind of technology you use?
We identified 19 patients at our institution that had a longstanding history of ulcerative colitis at the time of colorectal cancer diagnosis, and for which we had resection specimens. Mostly those were proctocolectomy specimens. Mm-hmm. And then we performed microsatellite instability testing. We performed P53 immunostaining, ERIC-based comparative genomic hybridization, and a targeted sequencing using a 48-gene panel.
So the TRUSeq Illumina Fourier gene. And for and for the studying the microsatellite instability, you did both. You did MSI, and you also did immunohistochemistry for MMR genes, right?
Yes, we did both. We did PCR with the Bethesda panel and the Promega panel, a combination of both, and the four microsatellite markers, MLH1, MSH2, MSH6, and PMS2.
Excellent. So the patients were 19 patients, but I realized there were 25 total cancer cases. So I imagine there were some synchronous lesions, right?
Yes, there were 24 cancer samples. And so there were four patients that had synchronous colorectal cancer lesions.
And we'll come back to that because it kind of helped you in making drawing some conclusions about the phylogenic progression of this cancer and the field effect. So what were the findings?
Well, the first thing we did was the microsatellite testing. So all of them were microsatellite stable. And then we continued to investigate chromosomal instability and performed array-based comparative genomic hybridization as a surrogate. And we found that all of the cancers had copy number alterations. The pattern of chromosomal aneuploidies reflected the patterns that we usually see in sporadic colorectal cancer with one significant difference. And that was the gain of chromosome arm 5P, which was gained in about 50% of our cases with ulcerative colitis, but is only gained in a minority of sporadic colorectal cancers between 10 and 15%, depending on the cohort.
And is an important point to say that your historic control, you use the TCGA basically to as a comparator,
yes,
right?
Yes, we used the TCGA and also compared it to previous cohorts that we have analyzed with array-based comparative genomic hybridization, but the results are very similar.
That's interesting. So there must be something at the chromosome 5P. And in terms of P53, what did you find?
Mutation profiling revealed that, as expected, the most frequent mutation was P53, which was mutated in a little more than 80% of cases in our cohort, which is in line with the literature and other studies. Mutations in all other genes were rare and below 20%, which includes APC, which is mutated frequently at about 75% in sporadic colorectal cancer. But here, rare. Also, KRAS, only 20% mutated in colitis-associated cancers versus about 40% in the sporadic setting.
So the high rate of P53, that's in contrast to sporadic. I mean, I know you mentioned the Wnt signaling and the tyrosine receptor kinase were lower than sporadic. How about the P53? It's higher than?
P53 is a little higher in the colitis setting, but marginally. I mean, it's about 69%, I think, in the sporadic and 80% in our cohort. So
that's
it's close. A minor difference, so.
And speaking of P53, how did you, I know you did it by immunohistochemistry in addition to being part of the gene panel. How do you interpret the immunohistochemistry? Because I realize there are some changes. I know I learned something from reading your paper.
we tried to confirm the mutations that we found by immunohistochemistry and stained for P53 using the DO7 antibody from Darko Echeland. And usually, missense mutations in P53 lead to a very strong nuclear accumulation of P53 in the mutated pattern, whereas truncating mutations in P53 usually lead to a complete loss of staining. And in the wild-type setting of P53, one usually observes a regulated expression, meaning that there's some weakly positive nuclei and there's some negative nuclei.
So strong, extensive nuclear staining correlates with mutation, but also total absence of nuclear staining. And I think that's the point I wanted to emphasize for the audience, because a lot of people don't think of that as part of that due to truncating mutations. So that's something important to remember. You agree?
Yes, definitely.
And it did correlate with your sequencing. Wonderful. So so they were MSS. There was some 5P gains, right? You said, I think it was gains, and which was salient. And they were all stable. And the rest pretty much comparable to the ones in a non-colitis setting. So how do you... how does that help you now? You mentioned that this could be possibly an early detection. And also you touched a little bit, and I think we have some time to discuss that, about the phylogenic in cases that were synchronous. It clued you in to whether it's field effect or whether there is how these cancers pop up in these patients.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the early detection, I mean, there's at least two challenges in the diagnosis of early lesions in patients with ulcerative colitis. One challenge is it dysplasia already, or is it still regenerative changes and no dysplasia? And certainly we think that the detection of genomic alterations, which include P53 or also the gain of chromosome M5P or aneuploidy in general, could help to detect these histologically not visible tumor evolution. That can certainly progress to cancer. And the second challenge is to distinguish whether a lesion is truly associated to colitis or whether it's a sporadic precursor lesion that develops, which has implications for treatment. And since we know that we do usually not observe gains of chromosome 5P in sporadic colorectal cancers and even less in sporadic adenomas, we could use this to as a biomarker to help distinguish the two entities.
Really, that would be great. So if you're looking at a polyp or an adenoma and you're trying to decide, because patient has UC, is this just part of the sporadic background that these patients like any can have versus is it related to the process? You think using 5P and anything else, the P53 or MSS or just the 5P will help?
I don't think that MSS or microsatellite testing will help because the MSI cases are rare and most sporadic adenomas are MSS
are
as
also
well.
Stable.
So we certainly P53 one can discuss because P53 is usually mutated later in the sporadic colorectal carcinogenesis compared to the colitis-related carcinogenesis. But to be honest, I think it's probably a combination of both mutation of P53 and copy number changes, including specifically the 5P. But it's not just the 5P that we observe. The copy number load from our gut feeling is higher in the colitis-associated lesions as well compared to sporadic adenomas.
Which
makes nothing
sense
that we have formally assessed yet. That's something we are working on, but that's
so
our
that's where you want to take it next step is see the implication of the 5P or identify a biomarker that can help you not only in cases where is it inflammation, is it reactive atypia versus is true early dysplasia that is not visible yet, and in the setting of the sporadic. So you can that's a great line to pursue, and that hopefully will help and lead to because I know this is a question. Thankfully, I don't do GI anymore, but that's a question that a lot of pathologists face in their practice. So that would be great. Well, and a word about the phylogenic, the cases that are synchronous.
Yeah. I mean, we saw that the most frequent mutation is in P53. And even though most of the colorectal cancers have a P53 mutation, also the synchronous ones, they are usually distinct. So if a patient has two synchronous carcinomas, in most of the instances, both of them have a P53 mutation, but usually the two mutations are not the same, indicating that likely they arose independent from one another.
So you have the field effect, the background instability, and then different pathways going into different P53 mutation leading to the two synchronous tumors.
Yes. But it indicates that P53 is the central player in this process because apparently tumors that have a mutation in p53 have some kind of advantage, because I think otherwise we would see more diversity there.
And they're more permissive for the chromosomal instability because of
correct,
the
certainly they are
activation of the p53. Well, great, amazing work, very informative. I enjoyed the chat, and I'm sure our audience will learn a lot. And good luck to you with your future endeavor. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you very much. What a great pleasure and honor for me as well.
Any opinions expressed in this podcast are the speaker's own and do not represent the views of Modern Pathology, Springer Nature, UAB, or USCAP. Your ModPath chat host and scientific director is Dr. George Netto. Producers are Christina Crow, Amber Jackson, Dr. Sarah Jang, and Dr. Catherine Ketchum. Technical direction is provided by Kaminsky Productions, music by Mitch Neubauer. Thanks to the authors, reviewers, and editors of Modern Pathology for making this podcast possible.